All right, so Bruce, totally on board with asking ATC here for some help. They have info that you don't have, and they can probably authorize things that you're not immediately aware of. My question is, since you also said that that note is restricting whether you understand why it exists or not, what if ATC comes back and clears you via the exact same transition that the approach says you can't and says, well, you know, we can authorize that, you're above the MBA. How do you determine whether it's okay to follow the ATC instruction even though it's in direct conflict with the note that says you can't do that now?
Well, this is one of those cases where I would query ATC. I'd ask them, okay, but there's this note on the chart. Are we still okay with that? Just because it does create some ambiguity. And if they repeat that, then I'm probably good to go. As we've said in the scenario, that transition from Deschutes from the airway that I'm flying seems perfectly reasonable. It's not a big turn. The altitudes look good. So I'd be fine as long as I clarified that with ATC.
Yeah, right. It does seem perfectly reasonable. And we never really figured out exactly why it exists. I think some of us are leaning towards maybe it's just a chart error left over from a previous chart. Maybe there was one suggestion that maybe the TERPS criteria doesn't account for the descent in the hold in lieu of procedure turn. And so it says, 3,000 feet to lose in 6 miles or whatever it is, and that's too much. But we don't really know, but it looks reasonable. What if this pilot requested the GPS Yankee approach to that runway and ATC authorized a straight in landing or something, and the note says that you can't do that?
Well, again, that's something I think you just clarify with ATC when you have a question like that. You cleared me straight in, but there's a note about that. You know, what's the issue? Is that clearance still good?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Is that a note that ATC would be aware of, either of those notes? I mean, probably if you work the area a lot, you would know it, but would you necessarily be aware of that? I suppose that's a Kevin question.
Yeah, I'll let Kevin jump in, but I actually asked a controller about this very issue, and she told me that approach controllers tend to know their approaches backwards and forwards, every detail, because they're doing the same clearance, all day long, all shift long. Center controllers have a lot of approaches potentially in their airspace, particularly in a situation like this. And so they may not be aware of all of those notes. They certainly know their minimum instrument or vectoring altitudes. They know the procedures that they follow in order to get aircraft down onto the approaches. But they may not be aware of all of these subtle details.
Kevin?
The part of that I would add is, yes, I agree with what Bruce is saying about, approach controllers maybe having more depth of knowledge on the approaches that they're running. That's certainly possible. But the other side of it is, I think controllers generally know in their head the parts of the approaches that they need to know to do their job, which is separating airplanes and keeping traffic flowing. So a lot of some of the chart note type stuff, controllers might not find that necessary for their part of the job. And ATC generally isn't the chart note police. So if somebody lands a runway where there's a note that says landing that runway isn't authorized at night, controller may or may not be familiar with that. And the other side of that is, you could have situations where pilots might not exactly do what they're supposed to do and land that at night. And you have ATC sees pilots doing that and think that, well, maybe it's okay or whatever. So I would say maybe not as far as the approach controller or center controller being aware of all the notes and the implications of the notes.
Sure. Yeah, that note regarding a straight in landing is not necessarily on the controller. That's not the controller's responsibility. And
right.
Maybe the controller finds out about it once the first airplane hits an unlit tower trying to do that. Scott?
One of the things that concerns me about this kind of discussion is that should you be at this point in time, trying to figure this all out when you really should be focusing on at least some single approach that you can concentrate on and get it right? It seems to be when you're in this controversial mode, that's just an accident waiting to happen, making mistakes. And like was said, the controller may not necessarily be able to say one way or another. So, the goal for me when I do this kind of thing is to find an approach that works for you, stick with it, make sure you're comfortable with it, and brief that approach. I'm not going to brief 10 approaches.
Yeah. Wally and then Bruce.
I just have a question for Kevin. What charts does the controller have? Do they have? Are they looking at the same approach charts that we're looking at?
Yes, generally those are available to ATC to reference. The question would be, depending on all else that's going on in that particular controller sector, they may or may not have time to study what the chart says, because as a controller, if you're spending time looking at an approach plate and reading chart notes and details and trying to figure out how that applies to one plane doing one approach, that means that you're not looking at the radar scope at everything else that's going on, or maybe you're looking at both and trying to keep a good scan between the two. But if it's a busy sector with a lot of traffic, you may not have time as a controller to be able to devote a significant amount of time to really getting into the nitty-gritty details on an approach plate.
Bruce, and then I think Doug.
Yeah, Scott's point about not trying to figure this stuff out in the cockpit during the final stages of a flight is a really good one, and one that I find I increasingly am bringing up with my IFR students and customers. I think there's a trend now that we're all using iPads, not to do perhaps as much pre-flight planning and looking at things as we did in the days when we had to file JEP revisions, and we were actually looking at charts as we tore them out of the book and put the new ones in. And people tend not to be paying attention to these kinds of details during their pre-flight planning, or perhaps not as good, but at least during the cruise phase before you start down reviewing the charts. So that's a really good point. And if you're using these electronic charts, they get updated automatically. You don't have to worry about so much about having the wrong chart and so forth. It does still behoove you to take a little time and think about these the approaches you're going to do and look for notes and things that might be an issue so that you can have a chance to think about that before you really are in the final stages of a flight.
Doug and then Kevin.
I concur with you, Bruce and Scott. I certainly teach my learners that know who your final approach controller is, number one. And when you're handed off to them, you have to let them know your request. Otherwise, they're going to have to say, do you have the weather? What's your request? And so, as Scott is saying, you should know ahead of time before you even push the mic to talk to that final approach controller what approach you're requesting. Now, Bruce, a question for you. You said you're going to request direct FOMBO, but then the question becomes, will you be able to turn straight in from FOMBO, or will you need the hold to get down? And so I was wondering why you wouldn't have chosen HERBS, or HERBS, however we say it, why you wouldn't have chosen that as your first request.
That's certainly reasonable, Doug. And having flown that approach in the past, that's what I've generally done, is asked for HERBS or been given that by the controller. And that just sets you up. It takes you a little bit farther north, a little bit farther out of the way. But yeah, that's a perfectly reasonable option, and it clears up the ambiguity you talked about.
But the other thing, too, that I want to stress, and this happened to me the other day, actually. I was out with a client, IMC, I can't remember where we were going. I think Hyannis, and going to a fix, and it was unclear. The controller cleared us there, but didn't make it clear whether we could do the straight in or he wanted us to do the hill put, the hold in lieu of procedure turn. And I clarified that. But it's a mistake that I've seen controllers make, and it's a major mistake that I've seen pilots make.
That comes up often, Doug. I've, again, had the same experience where you're cleared to a fix and then cleared for an approach, but the controller doesn't say the words straight in, cleared straight in. And you can either ask them or do what I typically do, which is I read back the clearance, but I include cleared straight in as part of my read back to see if they'll catch that.
Yeah, you and I are on the exact same page there, Bruce. Thanks.
Kevin, I think.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you guys about the straight in versus the making the turn. And as far as if you, in this scenario, and for the record, I agree with Bruce's choice of FOMBO for an initial approach fix and fly the approach from there. And then for me, I would either want to go straight in from there or fly the procedure turn, depending on how low ATC could get me prior to FOMBO. If I needed a turn to get down, then that's a great tool to do it. And if I don't need it, then certainly can ask to go straight in, depending on the angle that I'm coming at FOMBO. But just to kind of add to what Bruce was saying about the chart updates and when we were updating our paper charts and that kind of thing, that you were more engaged with changes that you were making to the publications that you keep, and we're less engage that way with what we have with it automatically updating on our iPads. It's kind of a similar thing on the air traffic control side as well. When the approach plates and these kind of resources get updated on the ATC side, depending on what the change is, it may or may not get briefed to the controllers that are working in that sector. So there's times where approaches change and maybe a new version of an approach is out and the particular controller, the first time they see it, could be when a pilot questions ATC about how it's to be flown.
I just wanted to circle back to option one regarding personal minimums and circling approaches at night. It seems like that's ripe for a good discussion about even if you didn't have personal minimums that said that you didn't fly circling approaches at night. What's people's thoughts on the idea of circling approaches at night?
Scott?
Yeah, I mean, in this particular case, the problems I find with other students that I've had in this kind of situation is I'll ask them, what happens if for some reason the visibility or the ceiling just doesn't permit it and you lose sight of the runway environment? What do you do then? And you probably haven't briefed on what would you would do in that particular situation. So if you're turning, you know, a downwind to base leg and you look for the airport and it's nowhere to be found, you know, it's one of the things that scares me, especially when you're dealing with night kind of situations. Yeah, you might have some possibility if it has a good lighting system, it's available. Did you make sure that, you know, if it's an airport that you have to turn the lights on, have you done that? So there's a lot of situations that come about with circling that I'm just generally not comfortable with.
Wally?
I agree. Circling approaches at night are probably the most dangerous IFR thing we can do, I guess, other than perhaps flying in ice. But Bruce made a good point about how dark it's going to be, even though it's just after sunset. But under that overcast, it's going to be really dark down there. So that's a bad scene. And if you add a little rain on the windshield to give you a visual illusion, it's a setup for a pretty dangerous scenario, I think.
Doug, and then Bruce.
Just got to go along with you. And Wally, I don't know what you do on your instrument practical tests, but a circling approach is a required maneuver in the instrument ACS. And what I typically do is as they do the circle, about halfway through the circle, as they're on the downwind, they say, oops, we've just lost sight of the runway. What are you going to do? And quite often the applicant is deer in the headlights.
Yeah, that can present a whole new group of scenarios, that missed approach in the middle of a circle.
Bruce and then Tom.
Yeah, and to go back to the circling approach, I take it as a sort of a clue that a new airline pilot, for example, who's just checked out a new airplane is often limited. They can't do circling approaches, or some standard operating procedures only allow the captain to do, you know, circling approaches, or they're prohibited unless you have basic VFR. And at Bend in particular, you know, you don't have approach lights, you don't have all the big city airport aids to help you out if you're doing something like this at night. So yeah, it's not even a choice for me.
Yeah, so to answer your question about where would you go if you lose situational awareness on that circling approach, I mean, I don't remember very many things about my instrument check ride, which was now the better part of 30 years ago. But one that I do is the examiner asking me that question of, you know, you're on a circling approach and you've lost situational awareness and you're in the clouds. What are you going to do? Where are you going to head? And of course, the answer is, best I can toward the middle of the airport, because we know there's no obstructions there, right? And then you're going to actually, you know, get on some kind of, figure out how to get on the missed approach procedure and get out of there. But that really stuck with me for some reason. And now that I have had more experience and done a few circling approaches, particularly in simulators and that sort of thing, it just reminds me all the time that how important it is to kind of maintain situational awareness and understand where obstacles and terrain are, or in this case, aren't, which would be over the airport.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of pilots that have that personal minimum, no circling at night. And obviously we've covered that there's really good reasons for that. It can be pretty sketchy. But at some point when the weather's good enough, it's just a nighttime traffic pattern, right? So where do you guys draw the line? Do you have any hard line on where you will and won't circle at night or during the day for that matter? Say, for example, that we have this exact scenario, but the only option is a circling approach. The circling approach back to 3-4, I think it is. Would anybody take that, or would you go somewhere else?
Well, in this case, I'd go to Redmond. It's close by, and it's got lots of approaches that give me straight in. So,
yeah. Sure. How good would the weather have to be for you to accept that circling approach?
Well, I would take my cue from the limitations that are often put on new airline pilots, for example. You have to have at least basic, you know, VFR minimums. Often it's 1,003.
Sure.
For what it's worth, when I fly at night, even if it's VFR, I still fly the approach for a straight-in approach. I'm not even really excited about flying a VFR traffic pattern at night. So just for me, it's always going to be straight in. And if my only option is a circle, I'm going somewhere else.
Okay. Scott.
Another thing I see too is that especially when you're getting into a situation at night and the approach lighting system is either not very well done and you can't see it as well, I've seen with airports that are lined up against, you know, next to roads, the pilots tend to line up with the road instead, which is a really dangerous situation, especially if there's terrain nearby. You're probably pretty close to the mountains.
Tom.
Yeah, and I think that to agree with Doug on flying some sort of procedure at night, that's what I like about the 750, the Garmin, the latest updates on the Garmin 750 that give you the visual approach option. And so that's really handy at night, particularly when you're going into an airport that you're not familiar with, to load that thing up and at least gives you some guidance if there's no actual instrument procedure to that runway.
Actually, one of the safety enhancements coming out of the CFIT work group, we're just finishing up the final report on that, is that if you are instrument rated, the encouragement to fly an instrument approach rather than a circle. Well, we had a series of fatal accidents that all involved that exact same thing.
Bruce, I'm curious, you eliminated the VOR DME to 1.6 in favor of some other solutions, and you had some good workarounds. But that looks like also a satisfactory workaround to me. Any reason why you didn't choose that?
It certainly is an option. But again, to go back to the point, you're at the end of a long day. I've watched too many pilots not be able to fly the or handle the details of like switching from GPS to VOR guidance or vice versa. So keeping things simple, you're flying magenta lines, using the GPS for guidance from the en route phase, assuming you've now, you know, flown that tango route even, just makes life a lot easier, especially in this circumstance.
Yeah, so I would add and really agree with Bruce on this. I think that the discussion with regard to the personal minimums thing, if your personal minimums are that you do not fly circling approaches at night, then when you're about to fly an approach at night is not the time to decide that, well, I'm going to bust the personal minimums this time, or I'm going to modify it this time. You've made that up, that personal minimum, something that you want to stick to. It's important to do that. As far as personal minimums, that personally, I don't have any problem with flying a circling approach at night. I do them semi-regularly. But I will say that I think that it's important to have some type of a risk management approach to doing that sort of thing. Flying a circling approach at night at an airport where there aren't terrain issues and it's a familiar airport, there's good lighting, all these other things that make it, like what you were saying earlier, not that different than flying a VFR traffic pattern at night. That's a different situation than flying in lower weather to an airport that might have questionable lighting, to any number of things. Terrain, you can only circle to a certain side of the airport because maybe there's a large obstacle on the other side. All those things might add up to me not being willing to do a circling approach at a particular airport on a particular night.
Yeah, just one final comment. Some of this may become more academic in the future because FAA is currently in a program to eliminate lines of circling minimums at a lot of approaches. They're busy trying to keep up with all the new RNAV approaches that they've published, validating them and keeping them up to date. And so they're saying, look, we just can't handle the workload. We're going to start removing circling lines of minimums at approaches. And they published a big notice about that with details.
Well, we just had a 20-minute plus discussion on what to do and some of the implications of different choices in this scenario. And I think the common thread here is to just be in command and be proactive and ask for what you want. And you know, pick something like Scott said earlier, pick something that you know is going to work for you and then stick with it. You don't need to analyze all five charts, especially if this comes up in flight, say you were diverting or something. But also, like Bruce said, plan this stuff early so you're familiar with all these notes and you're not trying to figure it out as you're cruising down an airway and you've got 10 minutes before you're going to start an approach that is in weather conditions that challenge your personal minimums.